Welcome to the Trusted Leader Podcast, exploring the topics and skills to unleash your leadership and organizational effectiveness. Welcome to the Trusted Leader Podcast. I'm Sean Mader, your host, and today I'm really thrilled to have a dear friend, colleague, Jessica Corrigan with us. Jessica, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Sean. It's great to be here.
I know. So full transparency, Jessica and I go back decades.
We do.
Crazy to say that.
Yeah.
And it's been such an interesting way to be coming back together because we ended up working on a lot of the same issues from different perspectives. And now it's become a peanut butter and chocolate kind of situation here.
Yeah, it really has. And it's been great too. We've been watching each other on LinkedIn, as I'm sure good friends are apt to do, kind of knowing that you and I are in similar spaces based on the synergy we've always had as friends. But it was great to reconnect recently. And so here we are.
Yeah. And well, let me give people a little background on you, because you've had a really storied career. It's broadly in the professional services area,
right?
And in particular, working with law firms, lawyers, and some of the challenges that are unique to the legal field.
Sure. Yep.
And you're one of these strange unicorn hybrids where you work coaching, organizational development, but you're also really focused on process and operations as well.
Absolutely.
So you find you're kind of at a interesting crossroads of all of these areas.
Yeah. And I suppose I didn't really speak about it too much, but you know, the truth is when you're working with law firm owners in particular who want to be operating like a business, right? You need to really start to focus on the internal operations, how the sausage is getting made, so to speak, and educating law firm owners about the same. But moreover, you're helping people understand that as technicians, as practitioners, lawyers have to really step aside from that role and begin to think of themselves as entrepreneurs and as business people. And that does obviously affect how their law firm operates. But then it gets into some of the discussions you and I have had recently about those internal operations and some of the important things going on there.
Yeah. And you and I were talking about, obviously, the topic of the podcast is called the Trusted Leader Podcast.
Right.
We were talking about how people enter into a lot of fields first focused on technical competency.
Right.
And law definitely seems to be one of those where you get trained to be a lawyer.
Right.
You get trained how to lawyer. Maybe you go into a law firm, you get some experience.
Right.
At a certain point in the progression after you've established that, then we start to talk about business development. And somewhere in there, we don't realize we're also now a leader.
That's right.
You might be leading a firm. You might be leading teams. You might be leading your clients through complex processes. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, we go from operations, technical acumen, to what it is to really drive value, to create culture, to look at the customer experience, to look at where your revenue is actually coming from beyond the technical aspects. And that's where you surf in these worlds really, really easily. And we talked about trust being at the core of this.
That's right.
You were the one that brought up to me this statistic that 55% of business leaders know that trust or lack of trust is going to have a negative impact on their ability to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something in there, though, that most of them don't know or are not taking any action on that because they don't know what to do about that. They don't know how to approach it. So this is the part where you and I came together. So I'd just love to get your view and your experience on this topic.
Sure. So, you know, obviously what's really wonderful about the conversation we're having is this larger premise to the work that has guided my career. And that is that good legal representation itself is a public good. That is, you know, we think about lawyers, we think about the papers that they file and the suits that they wear and the courtrooms that they appear in and all of the pomp and circumstance of their environment. At the end of the day, though, what they're doing is they're solving problems. They're solving their clients' problems. And I can tell you from being in this industry for a very long time, what even I think gets away from them at times is the importance of that aspect of their career, because they are technicians and they are thinking and are taught to and become very practiced in thinking about how to win the argument, You know, Kenneth Feinberg, I think, said it best when he said, you know, lawyers don't go to law school to learn how to deal with the public. They go to law school to learn how to deal with other lawyers. And when I heard that, when I heard him say it, you know, on a radio show probably 10 years ago now, I thought, exactly, right? That lawyers are by definition trained to deal with each other and in fact to argue with each other and to have a successful outcome for their clients' cases. So when we think about relationships in the legal industry, we obviously think about the relationships that lawyers have with their clients. That's always very prominent. Right. But when you and I began speaking about this, and as my experience has shown me, it's not really discussed at all in terms of what does trust mean to a relationship between an attorney and a client, between clients and a law firm, between a law firm and the public at large? And then internally, what does trust mean among highly performing legal teams, knowledge workers, people whose minds have to be nimble to do their work well? And that's true not just of lawyers, but paralegals, legal secretaries, everybody in a law firm is surrounded by knowledge and data and information all day long. And it is really their art form in being able to translate that into successful outcomes. So considering that lawyers working amongst themselves, their own legal teams, trust is not just about how we're serving the clients as lawyers and as legal professionals, but ultimately how we're trusting and building relationships with each other to get work done in a high pressure, deadline-driven environment that adds additional pressure to the work that they do. So,
I remember hearing you the first time you said that lawyers are mostly trained in how to win against other lawyers. Mm-hmm. I'm somebody who flirted with law. And really, I felt I couldn't go down that road because of some of those stereotypes that go with it. Mm-hmm. And we now are looking at a field that is coming up against some really critical challenges from a cultural level, from a burnout level. The legal industry suffers much higher rates of depression, much higher rates of substance abuse, suicide, and sometimes triple, quadruple the rate of the national average.
Right.
And what you and I have been talking about is that the culture of being a lawyer and how they've gotten trained and these pieces that you were just pointing to all kind of build a culture where it's kind of at a tipping point. You can't push people harder doing right. more of the same and expect to get more. In fact, it's having the exact opposite impact. So I'd love to hear some of your perspectives of what you start to see and how that's translating into bottom line revenue issues for firms.
In ensuring that, yes, the work gets done well and that teams develop good relationships among each other to move each legal matter along in its requisite parts. But then also we have to think about what that internal environment looks like for the workers themselves and how trust can be used to build relationships between senior and junior attorneys, for example. The actual development of legal talent happens inside those walls, inside that same pressure cooking environment, where you have people who may or may not know each other very well, depending on each other, I mean immensely, to get their work done, right? Depending on their staff to interact with a client when that senior attorney is not in the room. How are the paralegals interacting with clients? Understanding too, you know, legal teams, legal professionals, doesn't matter what kind of day they're having, when they're talking to their client, that the client's expectation is, we're only talking about my case. But all this to say, when the work doesn't get done efficiently because there's some breakdown, that the team relationships for sure, or the relationship with the client, that is going to affect the bottom line. That is going to affect whether or not a client is going to pay a bill on time, for example, or have faith and confidence in that attorney or that legal team in general. So keeping a client happy is incredibly important to a law firm that's operating well. Keeping internal teams happy is incredibly important. Keeping junior associates and also attracting more and more talent to a law firm, right? We want the best and the brightest coming to our law firm. And why will they come? Especially now considering what's happening generationally. This younger workforce that's coming in has a different perspective on the work-life balance. It is a common theme in law that you have to earn your stripes, so to speak. And that's done through blood, sweat, and tears, through long hours, and taking on the grueling work of understanding how to deal with clients, how to handle legal matters. Ultimately, the work that they need to get better and better at because of the mentorship of their seniors. Mm-hmm. So there again, we see another opportunity for trust building and how important that is to attracting talent and to retaining talent, for sure.
And we see that challenge with senior leadership, with managing partners.
Absolutely.
The more we talk to people, the more we find that this is a continuous challenge. How do we develop a younger generation of leaders? They don't seem to conform to the way that we did things.
That's right.
So what when you see this this change in this generational shift, what's your view on that? Is there somewhere to meet in the middle? Is this one group is right, one group is wrong? What are some of the things going on here that senior leadership might want to know about?
Yeah, there's going to have to be some kind of awakening, right? Because the old paradigm isn't working, that, you know, you just kind of shadow, so to speak, a senior attorney for months, even years, to learn his or her craft. You know, what makes that rainmaker, so to speak, that excellent litigator, that excellent senior associate, partner, shareholder, what have you, what makes them tick? What we're finding is young people want to come into the legal environment and bring their own special sauce. They want to have different relationships with clients. They want to pursue different agendas, certainly thinking about social agendas and things that are common among this generation. So you can see how distrust would grow from potentially senior partners to young associates who say to themselves, well, hey, you guys aren't learning my way, and that's how I learn. So how can I possibly teach you in a way that I don't know how to teach? I wasn't taught that way. I was taught to just do as I was told and follow in line, and eventually you'll pick it up, right? It's a completely different terrain now. So what we have to consider is, how are we going to build trusting relationships within teams to ensure that young people feel seen and feel understood in this environment? Because candidly, when we want the best from a younger workforce, certainly younger attorneys, we want them to feel that there is value in the work that they do. Culture matters to them, value matters to them. And candidly, that does matter to the good practice of law as well, and it should. So what we have to do is help certainly shareholders, law firm owners, right? Business owners, even small and medium-sized law firms know better how to engage their staff and build the kind of relationships that, quite frankly, create better legal work.
It's so great that you start to connect these dots between relationship building inside the firm and how that translates outside the firm, because there might be something to be said that younger generations are maybe not as strong in their interpersonal skills, having dealt with being natively on the internet or going through a pandemic where a lot of our relationships are now taking place digitally like this.
You're right.
But what we find is when we start to train people mm-hmm. in interacting, and it shows up right there in teamwork, in cohort-based learning, and these approaches that we take, where people really have to navigate their projects together in this way where you're discovering how to work better together, that translates right out into one's ability to network, to take those same learnings out into cultivating clientele.
Yeah.
It has a difference in how we show up speaking to our clientele and the kind of referrals that translates into. So I'd love to hear kind of your perspectives on linking these interpersonal skills to how that bottom line for even clients and referrals even starts to generate a lot of revenue.
Yeah, this is what I love about us talking. When you and I talk, we always seem to hone right in on the meat of that bone. So what I'm thinking kind of ironically here, is we're expecting pro-social behavior in an anti-social kind of paradigm, right? Where people are talking through Zoom and hearings have been conducted via Zoom. It's been going on for years. And of course, young associates coming into a law firm, that's all they've ever known. They haven't even been deposing, right? Taking depositions of people in real time. So we're effectively dealing with a legal workforce, a young legal workforce here, who's never been in the same room with their client. And I think law firm owners, shareholders and law firm owners, that they have to start to look internally and really think about how they are creating, or if they're creating, a culture that is inviting to young talent, number one. Number two, we have to take very seriously the fact that we live now in a social media informed world, where just one singular bad Google review for a law firm can be devastating. Not to mention what one person's word of mouth experience can be. This could include not even just a case that wasn't handled well, or the client relations, so to speak, weren't handled well. Of course, you have to understand lawyers can't always win their cases. There's a lot of things that go into winning a case, right? But to understand that even in a case that you're not winning, you can win in the relationship with the client. And that's really the job of an attorney, to take very seriously that role that they have in attorneying for their clients and representing their clients. But all this to say, it's a lot to juggle. And that's why I've spent 27 years in this industry. There's so much here, the legal industry. And of course, we know AI is definitely going to change that. And I think in a lot of ways, implore this more artificial kind of relationship between clients and attorneys, a lot more two-dimensional than it historically has been.
Well, I think that's where there's a huge opportunity as well, because you have, if the old culture was to essentially haze junior associates to go through the process to do that drudgery.
Do it the hard way, right? Right.
Yeah. But that's also right bred way. A lot of this culture, right, this toxic culture, where they get really good at fighting other lawyers. They get really good at that aspect of the work.
Right.
But that it's breeding such a well-being crisis. Mm-hmm. And such a look, when you look at those numbers on addiction, depression, suicide,
yeah,
it doesn't speak well about the industry. So you it starts to show that this antisocial behavior is taking a huge toll on people. Mm-hmm. So this opportunity that I see in this, mm-hmm, is that the younger talent sees the bankruptcy of the antisocial behavior. They want pro-social behavior. And if AI can take care of some of this drudgery, then that becomes a leadership question. What if we start to pivot toward just promoting the pro-social behavior, because we want to have our people working on more complex cases together? We need to be thinking cross-disciplinarily here. We need people collaborating. Right. And the pro-social activity, the ways of showing up, that's what our customers actually want. The people who pay us are not lawyers.
That's exactly right.
they don't want to be dealt with the way lawyers deal with other lawyers. They need somebody who's sensitive and aware and has calm their back and has a strong relationship with them. So right. For me, there's this interesting conundrum we fall into, where managing partners and leaders of firms think that these are just more problems to add on top of a heap of ever-growing problems, when in fact, I think there's an elegant solution in here.
I think so too. And that's obviously what spurred, our conversation about this recently and why we're here, because we do understand there's a lot of power here for change and for opportunity that is at a very critical kind of crucible moment for the legal industry. But all this to say, the collaboration piece is really huge. I know Harvard Law School has put out papers for more than 10 years now about the role of collaboration and how it needs to become more and more fixed in how legal work gets done, because the moniker of the lone wolf you know, very, very independent, very insular rainmaker in a law firm who has his or her clients and, you know, brings in lots of money to the law firm is just a real whiz. That has been held up as a standard in some ways of how to be successful as a lawyer. And the rainmakers and the people who are on the forefront of representing law firms often get a lot of attention. I say that only because then what is the incentive for them to collaborate at all? So again, imagine a young attorney coming into that space in awe maybe of somebody like this, but is there a real expectation that collaboration is ever going to happen with that person? And that's a talented attorney, right? Somebody from whom a young person can learn quite a bit. You know, this is kind of where we like to go back and forth talking, but.
Yeah, you were saying something to the effect of leadership shapes the culture, the container for the rest of the firm. And I think that that's just a perfect example. We oftentimes elevate this rainmaker to some sainthood status. Mm-hmm. Somebody new walks in the door and is navigating this new environment and says, well, apparently that's how I get successful here.
That's right.
Now, oftentimes we've run into the rainmaker can sometimes also be the person with the biggest ego or even having, if there's underlying issues. We were talking about a colleague of mine who they fired their biggest rainmaker who was a blatant misogynist.
Sure.
But it was a very deliberate leadership conversation.
Right.
And they knew on one hand, if they fire this person, of course, they don't want to lose those profits. But they took the gamble mm-hmm. that their culture was more important. Mm-hmm. The well-being of all their other employees was more important.
Yeah.
And they said, we can't accept this person's conduct anymore. And in the beautiful twist to all of this, the difference that that made with all of those other employees, the demonstration of our values, that we're going to defend our values too.
Yeah.
Well, the individual profitability of all those other workers came up incrementally, far surpassing the individual contribution of that one rainmaker.
And you raise kind of an interesting point. It's a bit nuanced, but that's why having the operations piece to my career and my profile and my acumen is so important. Because if I'm going to say, look, we know this doesn't work. We know that we need this X, Y, or Z thing, right? That there's some bottom line reality to some thing going on in your law firm. Well, fine. Then what are we going to replace it with? You know, because we still have as many people to pay. We still have as many expenses of the business generally. It's an incredibly expensive proposition to run a law firm. People really don't appreciate that. And this idea, I think, too, that lawyers are just swimming in money. It's very, very rare that lawyers are swimming in money. Lawyers are swimming in work. They are swimming in work. And they are swimming in incredibly stressful environments. And we know that that's the case. We see the statistics that you mentioned, right? But I think it's really important for us to understand that collaboration is something that has to be taught.
Yeah, we talk about trust. We talk about collaboration as if these are skills that we should just have, right?
They're certainly not taught, right? I mean, lawyers don't even learn how to run their law firms in law school, right?
Well, and these are the topics that we often take for granted. Now, I think on the surface, we all know if you don't have trust, you don't have anything.
Right.
If you can't collaborate with people, then you're going to be limited to what one individual can produce. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things you and I have talked about is, well, where are people getting these skills then? Mm-hmm. Top performing teams do not let collaboration just go to chance.
That's right.
They're in active conversations about how are we going to function as a team? Mm-hmm. How are we going to deal with conflict? Mm-hmm. What are the values and the things that we're going to enforce amongst us as a team? How are we going to deal with breakdowns?
Right.
You know, it's like getting into a marriage or what kind of parents you need. Laying these things out in top performing teams, there's a lot of science on this. Mm-hmm. They work on how they're going to work as a team. Mm-hmm. That's going to inform how well that project turns out, how quickly they move, how quickly they get past conflicts. And that's not to say that people should even be in agreement. We encourage a lot of productive conflict.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, there can't be conflict in front of the client. There right. can't be conflict in front of opposing counsel, right? So a lot of the aversion to conflict is actually informed by the business conduct itself, right? Because yeah, when I think about law firm operations or operations in general, I'm always thinking of the Formula One pit crew, right? Where it doesn't matter what kind of day you had. If you're responsible for one of the wheels, that's your job right now. Get it done and get it done fast, but certainly in concert with what's going on with the rest of the crew, right? So that the car gets back on the track and back out, you know, to run the race. That's an incredibly pressure-driven, time-sensitive environment. And the point is, what are we trying to accomplish? There's the how are we going to create collaboration among our teams and increase trust? But there's also the why. Why are we doing it? Are our people aligned with why we do the work that we do? Are we aligned with why we do the work that we do? It's an incredibly important feature of a well-run law firm that there is a mission and that there are values and that there is a vision to the organization, to the law firm as a whole, that is going to help people when they're having really hard days remember why they do this really hard work in the first place. Because let's be honest, you know, law firms, they're not handing out jobs that are easy. They're not easy jobs, right? So just thinking right there about the importance of trust and collaboration. And as you're suggesting, the work that people like you and I do to help these teams understand how to build trust and what it really does mean and look like. And so, you know, that's, I think it's a good jumping off point to kind of talk to you about your experience, because you come from this world where you've done this with many different industries.
Yep.
We were, you know, attracted to each other again in this context to kind of say, well, hey, how does it look in your world, Jess? Right. But tell me your experiences of team building and trust and how you see it's applicable to the things we've discussed.
Well, that's a big question. And
I know there were four in it.
I know. Well, we'll see which ones I remember.
Just run with it.
I think everybody, no matter what industry you're in, is realizing that the complexity of the jobs to be done and what it takes to stay competitive,
right?
That complexity is building.
Right.
And then you have this parallel challenge, which is what's going on with people overall. It's not unique to the legal field. It's happening in many fields where you're dealing with burnout. You're dealing with people who are now starting to talk about their well-being. Obviously, I think COVID had a transformational impact on this. It may have made certain things better, but it's definitely amplified some of the other challenges.
It's hurt the professional services industry remarkably.
Absolutely. Now, what we find is that leaders are not sure what to do about this. Mm-hmm. Anytime we are in a state of stress or failure or trying to figure something out, we tend to look to the past. Mm-hmm. So that's why you find so many industries trying to do more of the same, expecting that they'll get a different result.
Or assuming they're not doing it right all of a sudden.
Right.
Things wrong, or some person on the team doesn't quite understand what we're trying to do here.
Right. And you've pointed this out too, that in many industries, law being one of them, there is a self-reinforcing culture where even your junior associates will say, people only care about the result.
Yes, absolutely.
And you even get people incorporating this idea that I have to sacrifice everything about myself, even if it's killing me.
That's right. Because the client needs it today. Because my supervisor needs it today. My supervisor needs it yesterday. And I've heard it four times. And he or she is right, but there's been this and that and all these other things pulling these people all day long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that flavor shows us the default that most people find themselves in. It's being purely reactive.
Right.
Everybody is on some spectrum of feeling themselves burnt out, unfulfilled, never enough, that feeling. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So here we are talking about, well, collaboration and building trust. Well, what's missing from all of this is what makes human beings particularly human.
Right.
We are social creatures. We're actually designed to be working together. We actually need human connection. There's a psychosomatic, energetic kind of force in that, that a lot of us have poo-hooed and we've been enculturated out of needing.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I keep coming back to this. This whole conversation with AI, even the stuff from COVID, is now expediting something that's been long overdue.
Yeah.
Which is us reconnecting with what makes us human.
Yes. Yes.
And leadership plays a huge role in this. If they are the ones creating a new conversation in their organization, that we value this, A, because what it makes our work better.
Mm-hmm.
It makes us better as people.
Mm-hmm.
It makes us more connected. It makes the work better. People walk home more satisfied. They're not taking their work stress back home into their relationships and putting on their kids.
That's right.
And we're starting to reckon with the fact that we are not purely logical people, creatures.
Exactly.
We don't just take our personal life and put it at the door when we walk into work, and we're unable to just take work and shut it off the second we walk in at home.
Absolutely. Especially if you've been literally professionally arguing.
Right? Especially with hybrid work, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or right. Just that's right. If you haven't even seen your colleagues for weeks.
Right. And so we've studied the top performing companies, and they are humanistically driven.
Yeah.
Now that could sound like a really lofty term, but what that means is you're designing your conversations, you're designing your structures, you're designing your learning and development, you're designing your leadership around how to have people win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the huge opportunity is, because it doesn't mean burning people out more.
That's right.
Just means going from reactive to a creative state where you can suddenly design for what people are really asking for. So when we find our cohort-based learning, for instance, we focus on putting people through a process where they learn these skills together.
Right. Together.
Right.
Together. The necessary ingredients to collaboration. Ingredient, rather, to collaboration, right? And it's interesting, too, that what spurred our entire reintroduction to each other on a professional level, I think was something that I think you saw that I wrote, you know, good legal representation is a public good. Mm-hmm. So how do we create an environment with more win-win-win? That is, our people are happy, right? The business is functioning well and able to pay these talented people for the work that they do. The clients are also happy, right? They're getting the results, or at the very least, the expectation was met of what they have hired the law firm to do. That's another win. And then ultimately, people whose problems are getting resolved at large and informing a better reputation for the legal profession in general, right? I mean, that's what's so beautiful about this, and why we do the work that we do, you and I in particular.
Yeah.
And why this is just always such a great conversation to have.
When I saw you post that, I was working with another law firm at the time, and it reflected exactly what we were encountering, which is the people who work inside the firm were just so busy, so swept up in their day to day that they had no connection to the value of their work.
They couldn't
see it making a difference. And you and I have talked about this study that KPMG did for years. They were wondering how to motivate their employees. Well, there were a lot of accountants who are going into companies where they are the auditors. So how do you get a boring job to be engaging in a place where your client hates you? It was essentially what they were talking about.
That was a TED talk, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I've seen this one. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's a perfect scenario. How do you create meaning for people in their work when their work is boring and the client hates them? So, and what they found, of course, you know, we talk about the power of why, having a purpose. But they found that actually wasn't cutting it either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until people could connect their efforts to making an impact in the life of a different individual.
That's right.
They could see that their work was, for instance, helping prevent terrorism and protecting Americans and their families.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That would make a good difference. Suddenly they could connect. Yeah. Here's what I'm really at work on.
Yeah.
Or I'm making the drinking water safer.
Sure, Sure. Things law firms are doing all over the place, right?
Right.
Hello, Aaron Brockovich, right?
Who's right.
Become a national icon. Right. There's such the legal industry, the profession of law has such a unique opportunity to do good and meaningful things.
When we talk about relationships, we don't use it in this airy-fairy kind of way. Right. We're talking about prioritizing how people interact in the actual environment that is supposed to be driving revenue.
That's right.
Now, I find it funny that we, in every other area of life, we have TV shows like Band of Brothers and all of these films and series about war where we celebrate the deep bonds of people who work together to protect each other and come out together, and they're in their 80s and 90s still getting together because of their bonds. And boy, that's just a testament to America and well, you take that same thing, and if you can show me that in the business world, it's held as an exception.
That's right.
It's held as an anomaly. It's held as something even maybe to be suspicious of.
That's right. Yeah.
But why would you go through all of that trouble in your workplace to have antipathy with the very people that you're working with when there's an opportunity to have your quality of life be shaped by the quality of your interactions? And we have a lot of statistics on this. Mm-hmm. High trust workplaces, people deal with stress so much better. They're so much more satisfied. There's 13% fewer sick days. Yeah. On every key measure, you see that people are showing up happier, more fulfilled, more engaged. They're more creative. They're bringing their best self. Mm-hmm. And that's where we get at that schism that we have in our culture.
Yeah.
Why do you think people would operate better in a place where their interactions aren't great? Mm-hmm. They don't feel appreciated. Mm-hmm. Prioritize people who act terribly.
They're never
and somehow never expect people to do more and more of that. And
that's right.
So the solution is how to get people reinculturated with the things that we naturally do well and learn, have them discover how to love it.
Yeah.
And watch them discover getting better results with less effort and more satisfaction. That's how you create one of those cultures, but leadership has to stand for it.
And that's what you've been doing and why you and I agree. There's an endless amount of work for us to do, just starting with the legal industry, but moving on from there, right?
Yeah.
And not because there's something wrong with the legal industry. It's because they haven't yet, in a global manner, been able to figure out what's right about the legal industry.
Yeah.
You know, so much focus on what isn't happening the right way, or when the client isn't satisfied, there's enough negativity. There's an opportunity. So many opportunities for good workplaces, good relationships, better outcomes, better bottom lines. It's absolutely true in the legal industry.
And it's the same solution that's going to help leadership build the next generation of leadership in their organizations. It's the same. When we talk about retention, we talk about engagement. Mm-hmm. You're also talking about keeping your own institutional knowledge in your organization for longer periods of time.
Got it.
So one of the things we have to keep bringing it back to is, well, where does the value in your company actually come from?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where does your business actually exist?
That's right.
And I usually do this as an exercise, but we'll just give away the answer here because I don't think we're going to have feedback on this, but it's found in the interactions of your people. Your business is created in the interactions between your lawyers and the client.
Mm-hmm.
Between the speed and the efficiency with which the work gets done is between the interactions between the staff members.
Yes.
So when you start to talk about all this stuff, the ability to solve problems, the ability to have things move, the ability to get good ideas, have harmony in how things get done, we're never going to have a perfect world.
Yeah.
But if we're not actively working to cultivate great relationships,
yes,
we're all stuck in a terrible place thinking that that's what's normal, when in fact, nobody wants that.
Yeah, I think you were surprised to find out that one of the things I like to do most when I come into a law firm environment is anonymously survey the staff about any number of things that are going on. So one example, you know, you have associates on a team, let's say four or five for whatever reason, they struggle with contemporaneous timekeeping. That is quite literally how a law firm gets paid and how clients are understanding that their case is progressing, right? So on Tuesday, you called opposing counsel to get this info, then I should see what's going on in my case as a client right there in that invoice. It serves as a report of how the case is progressing. Getting your young people, especially, or attorneys who have never had to do it before, to contemporaneously mark down exactly what they're doing all day long is incredibly challenging. And obviously, you can understand that's going to affect the revenue for the law firm. Literally, time that's slipping out the window, right? It's going to affect the interactions of junior and senior staff, supervising attorneys, having to constantly, you know, hold this over their young attorneys' heads. You know, you're not getting your time in. What's going on? I mean, it's just this incessant conversation. So I go in and I survey, and I anonymously survey the staff to find out, basically, do you think your employer or your supervising attorneys understand your workload? Do you think that they understand what, you know, different things are pulling at you all day? I mean, everything that I am surveying about to get the data that I need to be able to inform the leadership is about trust and belief and feelings and ideas and thoughts. It's not about, do you know how to keep track of time? Of course they do. That's the easiest thing they do in the day. And yet they don't do it, right? So why is that? Why is that? And we know it's not because they don't know how to. It's not an aptitude issue. It's an emotional issue. It's a culture issue. It's literally feeling like they aren't being cared for and that they don't matter.
Well, and you're pointing to something that it's a bit of a paradox. How do you give an environment more room to feel when its entire culture has told you that that's inappropriate?
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, I've been doing some work with a couple of bar associations, and it's the number one thing they bring up to me is that they have a well-being epidemic. It's number one.
Yep.
Now, here we are doing yoga, meditation, running off to India, doing all my hippie endeavors. This stuff is second nature to me, but that's not the pathway that most of these people took.
That's right.
So being able to tap into what's going on, they've been told that that's not okay. Now, we're always looking for elegant solutions. How do you get people to be more effective at their work?
Right.
And to develop that ability. So when we talk about being vulnerable in the workplace or emotions, a lot of people think that it's about emotionally vomiting, this gushing, like, no, we're not talking about that at all.
No.
We're talking about pro-social behavior that drives real-world outcomes. And a lot of that has to do with getting at root sources of ineffectiveness, because if you chase down that symptom of just timekeeping, you're going to miss what the real value that you could unleash in your organization is.
And you're going to miss the real problem, right? The real problem is not that these people don't know how to take down or track their time contemporaneously. The real problem is that they're overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So we have a capacity issue. That's why obviously I live with data. I have to have the data to understand what the real problem is. But my entire career has brought these themes to bear that are very easy for me to talk about because I see them consistently. And anybody who's watching this, who runs a legal office, a law office, or a law firm, who knows somebody who does, who knows somebody who works in one, none of this should be surprising to them.
It's not surprising, but you raised a really interesting point in a different conversation we had, which is, nobody's trying to create these conditions.
That's right.
Nobody wants to have strain and stress and burnout.
Right.
But what's unbeknownst to most people in these situations is there are huge power dynamics at play.
Yeah.
You know, we talk to leadership and they're shocked to hear that their junior talent does not feel comfortable coming to them.
And has one foot out the door.
Right. They're already have become cynical and resigned. They're already looking for their next move. It's a matter of how long do I hang here out of my personal security, which means they're not showing up. But then leadership really doesn't appreciate that we don't have a culture of mentorship here. Mm-hmm. Of course they can come to me, but that's not how they feel. Not when you start doing a little snooping around, not when you start to learn how they feel. And so you have this, these two groups oftentimes that have very definite views of the other.
Yeah.
And are usually casting aspersions, not yeah. realizing y'all are actually wanting to have a mutually beneficial right. outcome. It's just a communications issue. So we end up brokering conversations to say, hey, hold on a second. You didn't understand this person. Hold on. If you understand that, now come together and talk.
Yeah.
And suddenly so much of that tension just dissolves right there in the space.
It's fantastic. You know, what I say a lot of times to seniority in law firms is your door might be open, but your face, your heart is closed.
Yep.
Right. And humans, lawyers or not, right? Anybody in that environment knows not to bother you, right? So we have humans, you know, putting out this huge amount of work, these legal professionals, these human legal professionals putting out a ton of work, caring about the right things, wanting the best outcome for their clients, even caring about their teams, thinking the world of their teams. What do you mean she doesn't think I like her? She's brilliant. I couldn't do my job without her. Well, when was the last time you told her that? Well, she knows.
Maybe it's funny the differences we deal with between training and developing younger talent and right. then working with senior leadership. And there's always a bit of a Sherlock Holmes process in here.
Yes.
And what you find is that everybody has good intentions.
Everybody does.
And they oftentimes don't get expressed. There's a just a large but simple breakdown in communication. Yeah. And then, of course, for senior leadership, they do need a little coaching in just how to go have that conversation, how to address this is the condition that has persisted. Yeah. We now want to start to address it, and we want to do it with you.
Yeah, and not in a punitive way, right?
What not at all.
Because a lot of people want to know how to do this. I didn't realize that's how I show up. I mean, I myself, spending so much time looking at very serious faces, I have a face that gets incredibly serious sometimes too. And I bring it home to my, you know, to my loved ones where they'll say, you've got law face on still today, right? You're so serious. It's because I'm looking at serious faces all day long.
Yeah.
Part of what I have to remember in my work is to bring how I'm feeling inside and the hope and the happiness and the good feelings that we're talking about here, the relationship building, the pro-social behaviors into how I interact with lawyers, because they're not even used to smiling at each other. It's not an environment that smiles quite a bit at each other, right? You're not going to smile at a person you're trying to literally eviscerate in court, right? So there's just so much room for it in the legal
industry. I used to have that pop up a lot in our coaching programs because we're working with people from all different backgrounds.
Sure.
But oftentimes with lawyers specifically, it took a while and finally people would start to say, oh, I forgot that I can relax.
Yeah.
Because you just said that you're mirroring the people around you. And that's the thing I think it's like the water that we swim in. We mirror our environments.
That's right.
And at a certain point that just becomes normal, even if it's killing people.
And what I like to remind people is imitation is the greatest form of flattery, right?
Right.
So sometimes people think, well, if I act more serious, maybe my very serious supervisor will take me more seriously. Maybe, but
at what cost?
That's right. Right. Yeah. At what cost? Does that mean that's the right thing?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So open door face. That's a great one.
No, and those are the two sides of the conversation. Training junior talent.
Right.
Give them those skill sets that they really need that are going to make them better at their job, that are going to make them better collaborators, better at business development.
Absolutely.
On the flip side, leadership, learning how to create those environments better so that all of this can really become a culture change. Because the industry at large will never do that.
Nope.
The same pipelines, the same people going in, the same training to fight other lawyers, all of that becomes the same. So it becomes a leadership conversation inside of particular firms to say, we know that this isn't sustainable. We know we can't keep throwing more resources trying to retain talent and watch them walk out the door every 2 years.
Absolutely.
We know that there's got to be a different way. Well, the way is through your people.
Exactly right. And through your relationships.
Yep.
Absolutely, Mr. Mader.
Right. Well, Jessica, it's been a pleasure having you on here. I know we go all day here. And we are doing some work together on this very topic. So anybody who wants to reach out to us, again, we're dealing with larger firms and smaller firms as well. But we're just really committed that people are given some really practical and applicable tools so that not only are you going to drive better results, but do that in a way that's going to be healthier and increase leadership and bring some joy back into the work.
Absolutely. And then show them how that translates to a better run and a more profitable business environment. That's my expertise.
It's been so great to be able to come together and bring our different backgrounds together on this. If anybody's interested in finding out more about Jessica, you can reach her on LinkedIn, Jessica Corrigan, Corrigan. And of course, reach out to us if you are interested in any of the bespoke services we spoke about today. Have a great one. Thanks for joining us today on this episode of the Trusted Leader Podcast. If you'd like to find out more about our talks, workshops, or transformational services, head over to trustedleadership.co. And if you'd like to email us, is sean@seanmader.com. S-H-A-U-N @SHAUNMADER.com. Thanks.